Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Tip of the Iceberg podcast, brought to you, as always, by InsideThePenguins.com, a proud affiliate of the Hockey News. I'm your host, Nick Belsky, joined, as always, by Nick Horwat, and we have a interesting show for you guys today. Not a lot going on surrounding the Pittsburgh Penguins. The last piece of news, of course, being the firing or the relieving of duties of associate coach Todd Reirden. But we've discussed that a lot over the weekend, and we're going to talk a little bit today about the NHL draft lottery and what is the best case scenario for the Pittsburgh Penguins entering tonight's lottery. We're also going to talk about first rounder from last year's draft, Braden Jaeger, continuing to light up the WHL playoffs as he enters a pivotal Game 7 tonight for the Moose Jaw Warriors. And then we'll give our round 2 predictions because the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs roll on. We were both 7-1 in our round 1 predictions. We understand, obviously, round 2 has begun. Two games already happening. The Rangers up 1-0. The Bruins up 1-0. But we'll discuss all four of those series to close out this show. Horwat, how upset were you that you ended up losing one because you followed my lead with the Tampa Bay Lightning?
Nah, it doesn't matter to me. I think I'm more upset. I'm not mad that I lost the Florida Tampa one. I think I just had a lot of belief in Tampa. I'm a little more upset that Washington just straight up did not put up a fight. I think that was
they did not.
I think that one hurt a little more than misplaying the Florida Tampa series, which really could have gone either way, and I think we both just kind of took the history into account quite a bit in terms of Tampa Bay usually being the better team in that situation. But I mean, we just about nailed everything else. I mean,
yeah,
Boston ended up delivering in 7, Carolina delivered in 5. I mean, like I mentioned, the Rangers. I'll continue to stand by. There was genuine discussion that the Colorado Avalanche might lose to the Winnipeg Jets. They might. I don't know. No wild stuff that people were just doubting the Avalanche from the start. But, you know, it is what it is. We're on to round 2. Maybe I'll start watching a little bit more Western Conference hockey this round.
Yeah, hopefully round 2 is a little bit more entertaining than round 1 was. But we'll get into that here in just a little bit. Tonight is a big night for a lot of clubs. The NHL draft lottery, not as big for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Let's run down through the scenarios for the Pens as the lottery begins at 6:30 Eastern Time. They currently sit in the 14th position in the NHL draft order. They have a 0% chance at Macklin Celebrini and number 1 overall, but they do have a 3.2% chance to move up to 4th overall, according to Tankathon.com, and a 94.7% chance of staying put at 14th overall. So, Horwat, let's get this out of the way really quickly. Any hope that the Penguins move up into the top 5?
No, not at all. Not one bit. I mean, you have to come out straight up on top of the draft. You said that number is from Tankathon. I think the NHL's own numbers are even lower, I believe, and they're the ones running the damn thing. I think, if I'm remembering correctly, I'm going to try and pull it up as I spitball around here. The NHL, I didn't link it, dang it. I think the NHL gives them like a 1.5% chance, though. Like, straight up. Just, it's them and then the two teams that are after them in the 15 and 16 spots are like both 0.5. It's a pretty horrendous odd situation for the Penguins, and it's, you know, to be expected. I think had this been a couple weeks before the season came to a close, a couple months ago now, we would have been discussing the idea of landing a top 10 pick, retaining that first pick or that first round pick, and seeing what kind of options are out there in terms of prospects. But instead, Nedeljkovic went on that, got those 13 straight starts. They got points in a ton of games and pushed them closer to a playoff spot, ultimately losing out to where this is the situation they're in. And I mean, what's hilarious is the most laughable outcome that everyone was discussing during that run is exactly what happened. Not only are they not going to make the playoffs, they're not going to be in a good enough spot to land a top 10 pick.
Yeah, and according to NHL records, it is a 1.5% chance. So Tankathon, NHL records, figure it out, get on the same page here. I'm not exactly sure what that is.
I would roll with the NHL one, considering they're the ones
I would too.
Doing yeah. the thing, but that's just me.
Yeah, Tankathon's usually pretty,
they're pretty good, you know, though.
But good call on that one. We'll go with NHL. So 1.5% chance, amend that earlier, to get up to number 4 overall. Now, again, as everybody knows, if they finish in 14th, which large percent chance that they do, they would be forced to give up their pick to the San Jose Sharks. Obviously, they can get back into the first round with a Carolina Cup final appearance. So a lot of things could happen. Best case scenario, Horwat, Penguins win the lottery, move up into the top 5, and then Carolina makes the final, and you have a top 5 pick and then a late first round pick being either 31st or 32nd overall. That'd be great, yeah. But the odds of that happening are slim to none as well.
Yeah, that's very unlikely, and then not only that, but then you do lose next year's first round pick because that's just the part of the Erik Karlsson trade. It's either this year mm-hmm. or next year, and just a lot of people have said that you want it to be next year's that you keep because they're all assuming the team is just going to get worse. I say we'll see what the summer has in store. there's some very interesting things that could happen in Pittsburgh for the sake of this team might get better. Who knows? We'll see. Like I said, we'll see how things go. But I think losing the next, I don't know. You want to help the team now. You want to help the team win now. And regardless, this year's draft pick and next year's draft pick aren't going to help the team in the 24-25 season. So in terms of it, I'd say, I mean, that'd be great. It'd be good fun to get a couple of first-round picks, but they're not going to be useful for a couple seasons, but builds for the future. And who knows also, maybe the Penguins somehow land a first-round pick in a trade. If I don't know who's worth the first-round pick these days, but Kyle's looking to make some moves and some changes.
Yeah, I would say that if they're going to finish worse, it's not going to be that much worse. Like, yeah. I don't think they'd finish in the bottom 10 of the National Hockey League next year, simply because I don't think that Crosby's going to fall off to that level. I don't think Evgeny Malkin's going to fall off much more than we saw this year, and I think if you give him better wingers, mm-hmm. then he's probably going to be either at or above the level that he was for most of this year. I mean, and the same goes for a guy like Erik Karlsson, who you would expect to bounce back and be a little bit better next year. Same goes for a lot of players on the Penguins. I mean, there were a lot of players that had some down seasons. Some players that had can't get any worse seasons. I'm looking at Ryan Graves when I say that. So, honestly, they finished 14th in the draft lottery last year. They're sitting 14th in the draft lottery this year. They might finish 14th in the draft lottery again next year, which is the worst place to be. You don't want to be in the middle, especially if you're in the middle and not even making the playoffs, because then there's financial consequences that as we saw last week, and our thoughts go out to everybody that ended up losing their job on the business side of things for the Penguins. So you need to make the playoffs, you need to be better, and you certainly need to get out of this purgatory of 14th position in the NHL draft lottery odds. But before we move on and talk a little bit about Braden Jaeger, some bright future coming with him, let's talk a little bit about the draft lottery outside of Pittsburgh. Who would you like to see land at number 1 overall and get projected Macklin Celebrini out of Boston University? Here are the odds for the 11 teams that can get Celebrini. San Jose has a 25% chance. Chicago, for back-to-back years, can get it, 13.5% chance. Anaheim has an 11.5% chance. Columbus, down at 4th, with 9.5, Montreal at 8.5, Utah has a 7.5% chance to land Macklin Celebrini, Ottawa has 6.5, Seattle has 6, Calgary has 5, New Jersey has 3.5, and the Buffalo Sabres round out that top 11 with only a 3% chance to get to number 1 overall. So Horwat, who would you like to see get that number one overall selection later this evening.
I'd be cool with the San Jose Sharks getting it. A, they were just terrible this year and obviously have the highest percentage and the highest stake of doing it. Also, just the story behind that, he's from out there, is he not? He played for like the Junior Sharks or something growing up, Macklin Celebrini, if I am not mistaken. You don't want to see the Blackhawks win it again. We understand that, the whole situation of why people don't want them to win it, but also just they're trying to rebuild their franchise, but they got Connor Bedard, and that should be enough for them. The Ducks also just straight up deserve something. I like the Ducks. I like the Sharks, the Ducks, and I'm going to go to Utah just because they're going to be, the jokes that are surrounding Utah are hilarious. Mm-hmm. I think Utah would be an entertaining one for the sake of chaos, because when the Penguins aren't playing, I root for chaos. And I mean, that's why I wanted to see Boston, Toronto go to seven. That's why I want to see a ton of long series in the second round when we discuss that. I'm a fan of chaos, and I think Utah would bring a ton of that, barring like Buffalo or New Jersey moving up all 10 spots.
Mm-hmm. Now, Macklin Celebrini is from Vancouver, British Columbia, but you are correct. He played for the San Jose Junior Sharks as a 14-year-old in the 2019-20 season. Jeez,
yeah, because
he's 2019-20. That makes
also,
me feel old.
Yeah, and he's because he's going to represent Canada at the World Championship, which, by the way, so is Michael Bunting.
Yes. Yes, not Sidney Crosby. We'll see how that relationship goes over the next couple of seasons. But at the end of the day, he also played for Shattuck St. Mary's. So
there you go.
First overall picks, Shattuck St. Mary's. It's a thorough through. But if I had to pick one of these teams, I would say Anaheim. Mm-hmm. Eventually, they got to win one. I mean, it's not Connor Bedard. They missed out on Connor Bedard. It's not Sidney Crosby. They missed out on Sidney Crosby. They finished second in both of those draft lotteries. But Macklin Celebrini is going to be a really nice, young player. And it's just going to make it more entertaining seeing what they already have on their roster. I mean, Gauthier and McTavish mm-hmm. are all out there. And, even being led by a guy like Troy Terry, who's not over the hill old. He's in his prime and he has all these young players around him. I'd like to see the Ducks move up and finally win the draft lottery. Send him down there with all those young players and just let it cook. Finally work for the Anaheim Ducks and Pat Verbeek. Who would I not want to see him go to? I have two teams here. Columbus, sorry. That's where superstars go to fade into the background. Mm-hmm. And Seattle, because right out of the gate, their first two drafts, they got Matty Beniers and Shane Wright. Now, Shane Wright hasn't panned out as well as many had expected, but you still got to pick at fourth overall. You still got to pick at second overall. I don't think Seattle needs to move up from where they're at.
Yeah, they're fine. Honestly, there aren't too many teams in here I don't think I'm against. I think Chicago's just the easy one because they got it last year. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, you're right about Columbus. That's kind of where good players go to not have a career anymore. But they're trying to build something still. I think it could be an interesting location. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, there's not too many teams I'd be upset with. Yeah, really. The Devils. I'm going to say the Devils, but that's just because, again, the big, you jumped up 9 spots. Okay, yeah. I mean, again, like I said, I'd also be rooting for chaos there, but also Devils within the division. They have plenty of good pieces, and they don't need another piece like that to help really get them over the edge. I mean, their one good year, I'd said, was just going to be that one good year. They're going to kind of fade back into normalcy. But going forward, they should be a threatening team again if they can figure out their goaltending.
The other team down there is Buffalo, but I don't think anybody is going to root against Buffalo simply because they haven't made the playoffs since 2011. Yeah. Right? I mean, bringing back Lindy Ruff. Not to mention, every time they've had a really high pick, Owen Power, Rasmus Dahlin, they always take the defenseman. So give them a forward to play with Tage Thompson.
Jack Eichel traded.
Yeah, well, you almost forget that he played for Buffalo at this point, don't you?
I have one of his jerseys, too, from the Buffalo days. It was one of the, way back in the day when we had a cool hockey sponsorship, it was one of those free boxes. It was the first reverse retro of the sorts, the white. It's a really cool sweater.
So we'll see what happens later tonight, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, NHL Draft Lottery. Who will walk away with number one overall and, expectedly, Macklin Celebrini. But we're going to move on and talk a little bit more Penguin-centric prospect talk, talking a little bit about Braden Jaeger. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Tip of the Iceberg podcast. Kyle Dubas mentioned way back in December wanting to see the young prospects in the system elevate their respective teams, wherever they were at, whatever, you know, junior team, college team that they were playing for. He wanted to see them elevate. He saw it with Tristan Broz back in Denver, and that's why he rewarded him with his three-year ELC. He was talking about Braden Jaeger at that moment going to the World Junior Championships for Team Canada. Now, Jaeger had a pretty decent tournament. Canada did not. How does he follow it up in the WHL playoffs? Well, his team is entering a pivotal Game 7 later tonight in the Eastern Conference Finals. The Moose Jaw Warriors taking on the Saskatoon Blades. But Braden Jaeger has had an electric playoffs up to this point. 20 points, 10 of those goals in 15 playoff games for the Moose Jaw Warriors. Horwat, have you been checking out some of these goal recaps? Have you been checking out any of the WHL Moose Jaw Warriors playoffs as Braden Jaeger continues to impress in his fourth season with them down there in the WHL?
Not too close of attention, just kind of been seeing how the series have been going, just seeing what the outcomes are looking like. It looks like they're, you know, pretty close on the verge of making the Memorial Cup, which is a huge deal for these junior players, and they just got to drive through. And seeing Braden Jaeger produce the way he has, and you told me before we even started, he's not even the best on his team right now. Just Nuts. I'd say I need to start watching more, and I should start tuning in a little closer to see how things are going. But as of right now, it's been grinding. It's been working along, and I mean, they handled Owen Pickering's team pretty easily, and they seem like a buzzsaw almost. Do they not?
They do, but they're running into another one in the Saskatoon Blades. Yeah. I mean, these games have all pretty much been one-goal games or going into overtime. Like, Game 6 was an overtime winner for the Moose Jaw Warriors, and you mentioned it there that Braden Jaeger is having a great playoffs. He is tied for third in scoring on the Moose Jaw Warriors. Denton Matejczuk, who we talked about a lot leading up to his draft year, 27 points. Jagger Furkus, who is also, you know, as we mentioned, Seattle Kraken got off to a pretty good start to their, you know, organization. Jagger Furkus is in their organization, 26 points in 15 games. Jaeger has 20, and so too does Matthew Savoy. So a lot of really talented prospects for the Moose Jaw Warriors, Jaeger being just one of them, obviously playing both at center and at wing, and he's continued to develop that shot and develop that 200-foot game that has been a real big reason as to why a lot of people in Pittsburgh are getting excited about when he could potentially join the National Hockey League Pittsburgh Penguins, or at the very least, join the American Hockey League Penguins and get a little bit more visibility to fans in the eastern portion of the United States and Canada. But the problem being, he has one more season of junior eligibility left. He can play at the NHL level, not at the AHL next season. Is there any way you see him making that NHL roster, even if it's for those 9 games that he can play before he gets relegated back to the WHL?
I'd say it's possible. I know Kyle Dubas wants to see him and wants to see a bunch of those prospects battle in camp and battle for NHL roster spots, and for some of them, AHL roster spots. I could see him to start the season, those 9 games, those get the legs under you. If he has a good preseason, if he has a good camp, much like he did this past season, if he does that one more time, I could see him getting the chance in those early season games because, there's going to be a lot of turnover and a lot of change on this Penguins team, but maybe there's a bit of experimenting when it comes to the start of the season before things really pick up. If anything, the Penguins proved you, as long as you're kind of close, you only really need the last couple of weeks. Again, don't actually do that, but the first 9 games is a perfectly fine time to sort of experiment, see what you have, especially with key prospects that you might not have a choice but to send back down to juniors. So I wouldn't be shocked to see it happen. I'm thinking it's unlikely, but I would like to see it, and it's definitely possible.
Where the Penguins are currently at, I could see it happening for sure, but there would be couple of circumstances that would have to happen. I think he would have to jump guys like Ville Koivunen, guys like Valtteri Puustinen, guys like, you know, Vasily Ponomarev. I think that if all things are equal with them going through training camp, Kyle Dubas is going to say, okay, we're going to give these guys a shot first. But at the same time, if Jaeger is undeniably excellent during camp, why wouldn't you give him that opportunity? And the Penguins are trying to get younger, so you give him that opportunity, and it could be the same thing as, you know, Sam Poulin the first time he got called up. It was, all right, in these three games, he looked good, but it just didn't look like he was quite up to speed. If it happens with Jaeger, okay, maybe you send him back to the WHL. But at the same time, look at the season that he had this year. He's a 200-foot player. He's defensively responsible. And he scored career highs in goals and points. What more does he have at that level? And does it actually hurt his progression to send him back? But again, it hurts that by 4 days and by two games, so in two different instances, he missed it by just a hair, he's not able to play at the American Hockey League level because he would have had to play 25 games in his rookie season with the Moose Jaw Warriors. I believe he played 24, and he'd have to be 20 years old before, or on or before December 31st of this year. He turns 20 years old on January 3rd of next year, so he can't play at that American Hockey League level. He can't take that step up, so it's going to be a very difficult decision for Kyle Dubas if he shows out and shows that he could be ready, because you don't want him to play that year in junior and not really be able to grow as much. But at the same time, that might just be where you're at with Braden Jaeger.
You might, yeah, just may not have a choice, and then kind of just have to sit and wait for you know, his season to be over at that level. You know, it's going to be a difficult pull. You know, but the way the league is gearing its focus toward young prospects, the young kids that are 18, 19, 20 years old, and letting them play at the NHL level, again, it's a difficult situation because the Penguins are big fans of, at least they always have been organizationally, of letting those guys cook in their junior teams. I mean, from what I remember, Daniel Sprong stayed with his junior team for quite a while. P.O. Joseph did as well after he was acquired by the Penguins and looked to be a good, solid NHLer, or at least, you know, that top prospect at the time. He stayed with his QMJHL team for quite a while. Same goes for, I'm forgetting another one, Sam Poulin, actually. Sam Poulin and Nathan Legere at the time, whenever they were both possibly going to be some of the top prospects in the system, they stayed in that extra year, I think, too. So the Penguins are pretty big fans of doing that sort of thing, but all of that, old regimes. Mm-hmm. Who knows if Kyle Dubas is fine with letting the 19-year-old play, because you got to figure, I know he wasn't the man in charge at the time, it was Lou Lamoriello still, but letting guys like William Nylander at the time of, you know, he was young, Austin Matthews coming in at 18 or 19, and then Mitch Marner coming in at 18 or 19. Letting them play right away. I mean, yeah, you didn't get Jaeger in last year, but if Kyle Dubas has that way of thinking, it wouldn't shock me again to see him let another young, I don't want to say the word superstar, but another young kid crack an NHL lineup with a bunch of veterans around him.
Yeah, I wish we would have gotten an opportunity to see him be put in a situation like that this year, but of course the Penguins season ended prematurely and the Moose Jaw Warrior season is still going. So if the roles were reversed and the Moose Jaw Warrior season had prematurely, I would have been interested to see if he would have been called up for the postseason with the Penguins, signed to that 3-year ELC and given the opportunity. But, you know, at the end of the day, we don't know. We have to wait to see what his decision is next year. But the next thing on the mind of Braden Jaeger, the most gentlemanly player in the WHL for a second consecutive season, is what is he able to do in Game 7 of the East Finals of the WHL playoffs tonight? Moose Jaw Warriors, Saskatoon Blades should be a good one. Would love to see Jaeger come up big time and push his team into the WHL championship. Would love to see that 100%. The last time I believe the Penguins had somebody cooking in the WHL like this was Derek Pouliot. I remember he went on a run with the Portland Winterhawks, I believe, in the WHL playoffs at one point or other. So we'll have to keep an eye on that one.
Yeah, I'm like just looking at the teams that are in that bracket, and really, I can't recall any Penguins prospects coming from those teams. The Penguins are a big Q team.
They are
big on the QMJHL. Outside of that, you're right. The Portland Winterhawks.
Well, there was a head coach that came from the Portland Winterhawks as well, but we don't talk about Mike Johnston enough.
Forgot about him.
But we'll see what Jaeger's able to do tonight. Should be an interesting game. Obviously, like I mentioned, all these games have been one-goal games. There have been a lot of multi-goal comebacks and overtime winners. So should be a very interesting game seven, the two best words in all of sports. But speaking of playoffs, we're going to take a quick break. And when we return, our round two predictions and preview of the Stanley Cup playoffs. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Tip of the Iceberg podcast, brought to you as always by InsideThePenguins.com, a proud affiliate of the Hockey News. Horwat, you and I both 7-1 in our round one predictions. I wish it wasn't as boring as it was through most of round number one, but that's what gets us to round two and four really interesting series here. We have Boston, Florida, which we'll get to first, New York, Carolina, Vancouver, Edmonton, and Dallas in Colorado. Four series that, honestly, three of them I wouldn't be surprised if they went the distance and went all the way to seven games, but we'll get into that here as we give our predictions and our game predictions and all the fun stuff in between. Let's start with the Boston Bruins and the Florida Panthers, two teams that, listen, we didn't see Florida winning that first round series. They looked dominant at points in that first round series, and yet they lose game one to the Boston Bruins last night. Horwat, what's your prediction here? Bees against the Panthers.
It went the same way last series. Florida dropped game one, but then the old gentleman sweep. I'm going to go Florida again. I wouldn't be shocked to see it go the distance. I wouldn't be shocked. You said three of them. I wouldn't be shocked to see all four go to seven games. I'm going to give it to Florida in six, though. I know they're already down 1-0, but there was something about sitting watching the Boston-Toronto series that in the back of your head, or at least in the back of my head, was whichever team advances is going to get just murdered. Mm-hmm. Just murdered by Florida. So far, not the truth, but I could see Florida turning it on in the later stages of the, or after, in game two on to really secure the series for themselves.
I'm going to follow my bracket here, and in my bracket I had the Boston Bruins coming out of the Eastern Conference. I don't think they can do it in any less than seven, though. I think this is, if they're going to do it, they're going to squeak by again, and I'm going to be holding on for dear life to my Bruins winning the Eastern Conference bets that I placed. But the Panthers, they looked absolutely insane. They looked exactly like they did last year in the playoffs. Now, these two teams did meet last year in the playoffs. A 3-1 series lead for Boston was, well, evaporated in that one as well. Panthers came back and won it in seven. So it's tough. You know, I'm saying it through gritted teeth, but I'm sticking to my guns, and I'm taking the Bees in seven. I think that's going to be a heck of a series. Obviously, both teams play that physical brand of hockey, more so the Panthers than the Boston Bruins at this stage of the game. So I'm interested to see how guys like Marchand react to that. And honestly, David Pastrnak didn't have a great series in round number one. So maybe he comes back. I get that he scored the game seven overtime winner, but he was kind of invisible through most of that series. I think he turns it on, and I think that's going to be a big reason why they take down the Panthers in round number two.
Yeah, there was a point of, I forget which game it was, one of the announcers said there was a replay of Dave Pastrnak getting shoved off of a puck and like pushed to the ice. The announcer said that's a rare thing. That, you know, Pastrnak isn't usually off the ice. And then for the rest of the series, I don't think he played a shift where he wasn't at least on his knees at least once. Like, I was dumbfounded by how, you're right, invisible he was until that ending, which was insane. So, who knows? Maybe he does finally flip the switch. Maybe he finds something. Even Brad Marchand wasn't great in the first series. He was just kind of the pest of himself and then nothing else. Mm-hmm. Maybe he finds some legs. Their center depth is weird, though. I mean,
it's very weird.
Pavel Zak is their first line center, right?
Yeah,
dude has zero career playoff goals. Zero.
No, it's interesting. And, you know, you were saying there that, you know, Pasta was invisible for all the series until that last one. Maybe that's why Mitch Marner didn't cover him or Morgan Riley didn't cover him, because they just thought, I didn't even see you there. Pasta, you've been invisible so long. And then all of a sudden, yikes.
Great pass. Phenomenal pass.
Yeah. So Boston Bruins in seven is what I have. Did you say Bruins or Panthers? Sorry.
I said Florida.
Okay, so
give them 6/7.
There we go. We got one different to start the day. New York Rangers versus the Carolina Hurricanes. Rangers up 1-0 after Sunday's game one. Who do you have in this one? I think I'm leaning towards Jake Guentzel and the Carolina Hurricanes even after that game one defeat.
Yeah, so am I. I'm going Carolina as well. I mean, I got Carolina going the whole way. So if I'm holding to the bracket that I am, you know, that I set out at the beginning with, they'll find a way to turn it around again. Going down by one isn't the end of the world. And we've seen this Rangers team. I mean, we didn't see it in the first round, but we've seen this Rangers team not be a phenomenal team for parts of the season. I know they won the President's Trophy, but we also know that Igor Shesterkin is human, although Jonathan Quick is quite a good backup, especially this year. I think they're a team that you can get under their skin pretty easy. Who knows how many injuries pile up in this series with guys like Matt Rempe on the other end and whoever Carolina wants to throw at them, because they're not a huge hitting team. But I still think Carolina is going to get it done, because New York's going to get in their own head pretty quickly if you know, they start deciding play physical over smart. So I could see Carolina taking advantage of that. Ugh, I could see 6 or 7 again, really. It's so hard to say these series are going to be short.
Yeah, I'm going to go Canes in 6. I think that that's what happens there. And I think the big thing for the Carolina Hurricanes in their history here, especially with under Rod Brind'Amour, is their offense dries up. I just don't see it happening this time. I mean, Svechnikov is playing really well. Kuznetsov brings that little extra push. His penalty shot in the clinching game against the Islanders. It was actually, I hate his penalty shots, but it was great theater. Everybody, especially because it was the home team, everybody just waiting on pins and needles, and then the reaction as he just pulls the trigger on that one. I think they have figured out their goal scoring issues, and I do think that it's going to help them get past the New York Rangers, who, without Mika Zibanejad going off, probably would not have won. I mean, but again, that's a big if, because he went absolutely berserk in game one. So I'm gonna stick with the Canes here. I'm gonna go Canes in 6, and you said Canes in.
I'll go 6 again.
6 again. All right. Let's move over to the Western Conference. This is the only one I don't see going long, simply because goaltending is a very, very big thing. And as far as I'm concerned, if it's Artur Slovis or whatever his name is, or Casey DeSmith, I don't see the Vancouver Canucks keeping the Edmonton Oilers off the board. So I'm going to go Oilers in 5. And if it was Thatcher Demko, it would have been a much more difficult decision. I might have still taken the Oilers, but I just don't know how the Canucks are going to be able to keep McDavid and Hyman and all those guys off the board up there in Edmonton.
It'll be tough. It'll be tough, because you're right. If they are down to their third-string goalie, or even if they're down to Casey DeSmith against Connor McDavid, that's gone well for Penguins in the past. It hurts to say that Vancouver's not going to go far, because an early prediction, at least that I did with the hockey news and their back-end stuff, I said the Vancouver Canucks would be the Canadian team that goes the furthest. Got to remember, I said that before Thatcher Demko got hurt. Yeah. Well, I guess during, but you know what I mean. In the postseason. You say goaltending is going to be a big deal, and you're right. But also, man, what is Edmonton's goaltending? They're down to Stuart Skinner now, aren't they? The guy that they sent to the minors earlier this year?
Yeah, but, I mean, he looked perfectly okay.
Yeah, looked fine.
Yeah. I mean, Slovis looked, or whatever his name, Arturs. I don't know, because it just reminds me of Arturs Urbe, former Johnstown Chief that made it to the NHL. But I just, going with your third stringer, even if it's Casey DeSmith, it's tough. I mean, you know, Vancouver is a really good team, and if any coach is going to get their team to fight through that, it's Rick Tocchet. But at the same time, I just have a hard time believing that they're going to, like, I was worried about them against Nashville with a third string goaltender. So if I'm worried about them against Nashville, I'm not going to pick them against the Edmonton Oilers. So that's where I go Oilers in 5 in this one.
It's, yeah. I'll go Edmonton in 6. It's Silovs? Even I'm screwing it up and I'm
Artur
reading it.
Silovs. Actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah.
I'll go Edmonton. Keaton Slovis, the pick quarterback. I don't know why.
Hey, you know what? You work too many jobs. Because of the goaltending situation, you're right. It'll probably be Edmonton in 6. But again, if Edmonton is still rolling with Stuart Skinner in net, maybe some of that comes back down to earth and Vancouver can squeeze one or two out. But this is where, I mean, goaltending is going to be the difference maker. Weird that it's a couple of third stringers, but see how it goes. I I could see it going long, though. Like I said, Edmonton in six.
No, I feel like Stuart Skinner's not their third stringer. I think he just struggled.
How long did he play in the minors for this year? It was a while, I thought.
Let me look that up really quick.
Because they recalled him, didn't they? To get him up here?
Let me bring it up here, because Stuart Skinner played no games at the AHL level this year. That was last year.
Am I thinking of the right person? Who was the Oilers goaltender this year that struggled and they sent to the minors and then struggled?
Oh, Jack Campbell.
Oh, I'm so bad.
That's what I was the whole time. I was like, man, why are you going to disrespect my mustache brother like that? And Stuart Skinner, like, I thought he was better than that. And he was this year. This year, he played in 59 games at the National Hockey League level, had a 905 save percentage and a 262 goals against average, which is not great. But when has Edmonton's goaltenders ever been great? So, yeah, you kept saying that stuff. Yep. I'm like, it doesn't fit. But yes, Jack Campbell is the guy you were thinking of.
Yes. I was so like, take back everything I said, and give me Edmonton in six still.
Still?
And
okay.
Just because I will hold on to my Edmonton in six. It's not like I had the wrong prediction. It's not like I said Vancouver was going to win.
No.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting series regardless, and I'm curious to see how it goes.
Yeah, it's going to be, as far as fan bases and matchups is concerned, that's going to be the most fun to watch in my eyes. Not to mention the offensive firepower on both sides of the puck on that one. That's going to be electric. Let's finish it off with Dallas Stars, Colorado Avalanche. One that, you know, I don't see a lot of people giving love to the Dallas Stars. Now, they did have to go seven games with the Vegas Golden Knights, but let's not forget, that is not the Vegas Golden Knights that finished in the eighth seed. That is a much better version of the Vegas Golden Knights. And going down 2-0 in the first two games and coming back to win it in seven, you got to give a shout out to the Dallas Stars for that. But Stars, Avs, matchup of the 2022 Stanley Cup champions and the 2023 Western Conference runner-ups in the Dallas Stars. Who do you got in this one, Horwat? Last one of the show.
I'll go Colorado, and then it'll be a long one in seven. Again, goaltending could make a lot of a difference here. Mm-hmm. Jake Ottinger in Dallas, and then I'll keep backing Alexander Georgiev in Colorado. The guy's put up 38 wins this year. He had 40 last year. I think he led the league both times. I think you can trust a guy to. I think you can trust that kind of goalie in net if he's able to put up 40 wins in back-to-back seasons almost. Mm-hmm. So again, it could be an interesting series. Nathan MacKinnon's going to keep getting hot though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard picking against him, and I'm going to, but it's hard picking against Nathan MacKinnon. I just feel like it's the Stars' year. Right? That's what it feels like to me. And, you know, Jake Ottinger, if there's any goaltender in these playoffs outside of maybe Jeremy Swayman, I'm going to go with Jake Ottinger. So I think that it's going to be a long one like you predicted as well. I think it's going to be Stars in seven, but, you know, it's been written in the Stars. That was a horrible dad joke. But I'm going to go with the Dallas Stars in this one, seven games. So I got two game sevens. You, I believe, went two game sevens as well. I think you went Florida in seven as well. So
I did 6/7. I don't know. They could all go six. They could all go seven.
Except for Vancouver, Edmonton. I'm sorry. I just don't see that.
That's fair. I was reading the goaltending wrong anyway. So
hey, here we go. But it's going to be a fun second round. Hopefully a more entertaining second round than the first round. But we did get two game sevens, so I can't really complain all that much. But we'll see what happens with this one. I'd love to continue to be only one loss on the record. So, you know, Boston, Carolina, Edmonton, Dallas. Let's pick it up here the next 2 weeks and make sure that I go to, what would that be? It was 7-1. I'd go to 11-1. That's the best I would have started in two rounds, probably my entire life for predictions. So we'll see what happens with that. But thank you to everybody for tuning into this episode of the Tip of the Iceberg podcast. We'll see you guys next time.